Chaz and AJ in the morning, 99.1 PLR. Brian Blackmore is just saying during the song, is there a better way to go out? Say thank you and good night to your audience.
I truly don't think there is.
Have 2 weeks with your family.
I really don't think there's a better way for
thank
an artist
you and good
like
night.
Ozzy to be like, thank you, and that's it.
Exactly. Know?
Like, it's poetic.
It's poetic. March of this year, we spoke to Zach Wilde. Let's play that. On the phone, Zach Wilde.
Chaz and AJ, it's Zach. What are you doing, my brother?
Oh, my
Zach
God.
Zach Wilde.
It's Zach.
This Ozzy farewell show, when did you get the phone call, or how did they communicate they wanted to have you part of that?
I saw it when it first went up. I asked my wife, Barb, I go, Barb, did you speak with Mom about this? I go, what is this going on? It's just like,
oops. Mom being Sharon?
Yeah, that would be, yeah. So, I mean, since I've been 19 years old, I lovingly refer to her as Mom. So
okay.
It's just like, yeah, because I remember when I first joined the band, I go to the Rainbow Bar and Grill on Sunset. She actually called, and, like, you know, it's the three of us all hanging out at the Rainbow on Sunset. And it's just like, she called, and she didn't want me there.
Oh.
You know, I guess because they hadn't, like, introduced me as the guitar player. So, I mean, I wasn't telling anybody anyways, but I was just, like, hanging out. She goes, Zach, you have to leave. Sharon called.
Oh.
And I just goes, yeah, I go back to the booth with you guys sitting there. I go, fellas, my mom called. I got to go. Yeah, she's the best, man. So, you know, I love, they're like family to me. So, I mean, between Ozzy and Sharon. So, it's just, as far as the Sabbath thing goes, like, I found out about, like, when you guys found out, it was just like, oh, cool. I guess this is going to be crazy. But I don't know what we're playing yet.
Did you reach out to them, yeah, or then did Mom reach out to you?
Yeah, we've spoken, you know, Barb's spoken to Sharon a bunch, you know, about it. And I texted Oz and stuff like that because I'm always sending them goofy stuff. But but we haven't figured out what we're going to be playing yet. I mean, even with the Pantera celebration thing, we haven't figured out like what Sabbath song we're playing, like what's on the list.
Right.
You know, you can't have everybody playing Paranoid. You know what I mean?
It's just right. Like, yeah, seriously.
Yeah, and then you got to figure Sabbath's going to, if they're going to be doing songs, you can't be playing songs that the guys are going to play at the end of the night.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, so everybody's got to get a list of what song do you want us to play. I'll just learn it.
Is there a Sabbath solo that you would love to have the opportunity to play?
No, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, I'm a team player. Whatever you need me to do, whatever pass route you need me to run, I'll run it.
Right,
and
yeah.
It's just,
you know what? That's why, this is why you're so successful.
Exactly.
Because not only are you a great player,
right,
you're easy.
You're not a problem.
You know, which one is your favorite of all the solos you've done with Ozzy?
Well, I don't know. I mean, well, obviously, I mean, everybody always puts No More Tears up there and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But Miracle Man was the first song I wrote with Oz and stuff like that. So,
oh, that's a special one then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, what memories you have attached to certain songs as well.
Right.
Zach Wilde on the phone. How did you, at 19, become a member of Ozzy's band?
Oh, it's because I was in the, like you said, I was in the lifting weights then. And I offered Oz, you know, I was doing powerlifting at the time. He said, well, Zach, if you give me the steroids and the growth hormone, I'll let you play guitar in the band.
Wow.
And that's pretty much how it worked out.
Imagine a bulked up Ozzy.
Yeah, so ever since then, I've been hooking Oz with steroids and growth hormone.
It shows.
And things have been working out pretty well.
It shows.
That's tremendous.
People are like, I didn't know Ozzy was in the power lift there. I'm like, yeah, he didn't die. But, yeah. You know, he does enjoy the steroids and the growth hormone.
Yeah, he cracked a wall in his ass. Yep.
I mean, the best was this. I remember asking Oz, you know, because we talk about, like, you know, with Sabbath, like the Sabotage album, you know, with Ozzy singing, I just said, the vocal performance on this thing, I'll put it up there against any rock performance ever. That's like some severe Pavarotti going on this one. I go, were you just eating your Wheaties for this album? He goes, no, Zach. Just lots of drugs and alcohol.
Steroids. It works for him.
Growth hormone.
Yeah, it works for him. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I guess it works.
What a great human being. I never had the honor of meeting him, but, you know, everyone I've talked to has worked with him, crossed paths with him.
Just, I hear good things, yeah.
They just love this guy.
Yeah.
He's the best, man. I mean, like, the greatest thing about him, ever since I've known him, no matter how much money he's had or fame, or he's always, it's never changed him. I mean, and like, put it this way, all you got to do is just be around him for like 5 minutes, and him either just taking a piss out of himself or just anything. That, like, if we see on TV, he goes, look at the state of this, you know, and then it just, like, whatever the hell he says about whatever. I mean, you'll be on the floor crying, laughing. I mean, because I always said, if him being one of the greatest front men and, you know, rock singers of all time, if that didn't pan out for him, but just being a comedian alone would have just, that would have been the route.
His observations.
Observations. That's great. That should be a show.
Go,
at a White House correspondence dinner, then President Bush was going over all the important people in the audience.
Washington power brokers, celebrities, Hollywood stars, Ozzy Osbourne.
In his own category. I was like, okay, I'm going to get on the table now. How's that?
Okay, Ozzy.
You got to calm him down or you don't know what Ozzy's going to do next.
Especially with a crowd.
Right.
Yeah.
These are his people. Back in 1986, Jimmy Bell auditioned for Ozzy's band. And it came down to him and Zakk Wylde. Well, we know how that turned out. But, man, you got very close, Jimmy. Good morning. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, thank you so much. It's an honor to be here. Great experience.
How did they discover you? How did that work out?
Well, back in 86, I was endorsed by Kramer Guitars. And at the time, Kramer Guitars was the biggest guitar company in the world. You know, they had Eddie Van Halen as their, you know, main guy, and everybody else, you know, all these other huge stars on their roster. And the president of the company saw me play when I was out on doing a tour with Joan Jett. And he took me on as like a personal management type thing. He was really, you know, really loved the way I played guitar. And the fact that I was a left-handed guitar player, I got to push their left-handed products as well. So the audition for Ozzy had come up, and you know, they kind of already had, you know, decided on Zakk a little bit. And I got a call on a Wednesday morning from Dennis Berardi, the president, and he says, "Jimmy, Jakey Lee left the band, and Ozzy's looking for another guitar player. We sent your videotape and Sharon loves it and she wants to fly you out." And, you know, this is on a Wednesday. And I said, "Oh my God." I said, "All right. When am I going? Next week?" He goes, "No, today. You're booked on an airplane. You got to leave right away." So I didn't have a lot of time. Yeah. I didn't have a lot of time to prep. So I, you know, got to the airport, flew to LA, and, Ozzy's guy picked me up.
To fly on a private or a commercial plane?
Oh, it was just a regular, you know, one left out of Bradley.
Man. How do you let your guitar out of sight for that trip?
Well, it was, you know, I brought only one guitar in a gig bag, and things were a little bit different back then. Nowadays, you know, with all the shows I've done with Autograph and everything, I've bring the guitars right on the airplane with me, put them in the overhead compartments. Back then, they were a little bit more leery about it. And, you know, it was hit or miss. But I got to bring it on the plane.
Oh, okay.
And put it. Yeah, and get in the overhead. And that's, you know, especially with me being left-handed, that's a major thing.
Can't lose that guitar.
Can't just show up. Yeah, I can't just show up at a gig and say, "Hey, I need a left-handed guitar." It's just impossible. So I got there. Ozzy's guy, his runner, picked me up. And they brought me to this really nice hotel, gave me a couple $100 spending money. And I had to go audition with Randy Castile and Phil Suzanne at the bass player and drummer first. So I went there. All the guitar players did that. Unlike Ozzy, wasn't going to sit through 500 people that auditioned for the band. So I was there, and Sharon Osbourne decided to sit in on that audition while I was, you know, doing it. And I did really well. So after I got done,
what did you play?
Oh, I played like, I don't know, Crazy Train. You know, like I only had to do like three songs to show that I could play. And that I kind of knew stuff a bit. So Sharon sat there. She goes, okay. She goes, I'm holding you over, and tomorrow you're going to play with Ozzy.
Oh, damn.
So they bring me to a whole nother studio that had a big stage, you know, where bands would prep for a tour, I guess. And I'm there, and all of a sudden, in walks Ozzy. And, you know, I've told this story in so many interviews, but it's like, you know, you see Ozzy on TV, you see him in magazines, you see him in video, but nothing was as crazy as watching him come right up to your face, you know, person to person. It's really a whole nother experience. And this is when Ozzy, I don't know if you remember, he had shaved his head totally and then got that big demon tattoo on his upper chest and everything. So he was, it looked, it was a scary thing.
What was he wearing?
And, you know, I think just a regular t-shirt and stuff, you know, nothing crazy. I didn't even exactly know what to call him. I said, Sharon, do I call him John or do I call him Ozzy? You know, she goes, call him Ozzy, you know? There was one other guy. I'll tell you this story. I don't know how much time I have, but this is a great story. There was this one other guy. I don't even know who he was, this other guitar player from Sweden that happened to get a chance to go up there. And this is, of course, when Yngwie was, you know, starting to take off and everybody was getting into that neoclassical style of guitar playing. Well, he went up before me and I'm watching him and they're doing I Don't Know.
And this is when Ozzy's in the room?
Yeah, Ozzy's on the stage.
Got it.
And they're doing Flying High Again. So they're doing the solo section. You know, it comes to the solo section. And instead of this guitar player, because he was from Sweden, influenced by Yngwie, when it came time for the tapping, you know, the legendary tapping sequence that Randy Rhoads did in that song, this kid decided to try and sweep arpeggios through that whole section to make it like his own creation. Well, Ozzy, like, was standing behind him, flipped out and made like he was strangling him and, you know, like make like he had his hands up to his neck. Then he made like he was stabbing him with a dagger. And I'm just sitting watching.
You're saying, okay, don't do that.
Got it. Noted.
I'm sitting watching all this, sitting next to Sharon watching all this. I'm going, oh, my God. And then the kid would turn around and Ozzy gave him the thumbs up like, hey, you're doing a great job.
Nice.
Okay, then.
Yeah, so I, you know, they got him out of there. And so, I mean, that was kind of a good lesson.
That was Ozzy giving the hook to him.
Yeah.
And signaling, yeah, Sharon, this guy's out.
Yeah, it was, they escorted him out. And then I went up and, so it was really, really cool. I get to go up and I started off with I Don't Know. And to watch Ozzy, I'm sure you've seen him a million times do things on stage, but he has this thing that he does when he starts getting into it. He holds the mic and starts rocking back and forth a little bit with it. So I started off with the band and I had a great groove going with them and he starts going back and forth. I see he's getting into it and he starts singing and everything is sounding great. And when I did the solo section for the song, he got down in front of the amp and listened to me solo. And, you know, like I said, I did about four songs with him. And then
is that an out of body experience when you're soloing and Ozzy's leaning up against the amp, listening to every note?
Yeah, it was a freaky thing. I got to tell you, it was But believe it or not, I was much more relaxed than I thought I would be. I thought I was going to be, you know, bouncing off the walls and everything. But I think the fact that I got to audition the day before with the band, I already had established a bit of a groove with them. You
and
know,
then so watching someone knew. Literally get the axe, that's a pretty good feeling, too. Like, you're out.
Yeah. Okay, he was in front of me the whole time. So,
well, it also made me very aware of what to do and not to do. Now,
yes.
You know, I'm my own guitar player. I always have. I don't. I've never been one to copy another guitar player note for note, unless there's something I really, really wanted to learn. So, I did do Randy's solos basically, but I added a little bit of my own, which is exactly what they wanted. They don't need another guitar player to come in and play something note for note, because that's not showing any creativity of what this person could bring into the band.
But they also don't want you to reinvent the song.
Right. They wouldn't want me to do something totally off the charts, and which is what you don't do. So I stuck to pretty much basically everything that was there. And then I did a guitar solo by myself where Ozzy was up in the balcony part listening. And then I did this, I was playing this fast sequence, and then I stopped, and then Ozzy would clap his hands repeatedly real fast. You know?
Oh, this is way better than the Swede did.
Yeah. I got to that part of it, you know? So anyway, I got done with audition, and Sharon and Ozzy sat me down at the, right in the same room and said, well, listen, it's between you and Zach.
And were you aware of Zach Wilde at the time?
Yeah. In fact, I got a story to tell you with that. I'm at my hotel later on, and I get a knock on my door. And I open the door, and there is a very young, clean-cut, not a barbaric looking, you know, Zach Wilde, you know, he looked like he did, you know, back then. And he's holding two sodas, like two Coca-Colas. And he says, hey, I want to, you want a jam? So he heard I was in town, and I guess he wanted to see what I played like. So I said, yeah, let's jam. So he goes up to his room, comes down with, this little Rockman thing with two headphones, and we start going at it, you know, trading licks and everything. And I must have really impressed Zach, because he talked about it quite a few times in interviews afterwards. And I know for a fact that he did mention it at a guitar clinic in California. He mentioned my name, and he said, I didn't think I had the gig after I listened to this guy, Jimmy Bell, play.
Holy crap.
Was very cool. Was very, very cool of him.
Hey, Jimmy, you have a minute? I'm going to take a quick break. I want to get to the point where the decision was made and you were given the news. Ozzy dead at the age of 76, and we're all mourning here and shocked, even though we knew it was coming. We didn't think it would come so soon after the Back to the Beginning concert. Jimmy Bell tried out for Ozzy in 1986. It came down to him and Zach Wilde, and he found himself jamming in a hotel room with Zach after the auditions went very, very well. And you ended up going out to dinner with Ozzy, correct?
Oh, yes. So it was that alone was a crazy experience. So, they bring me to this very expensive restaurant. You know, you walk in with all these guys in business suits and, you know, probably all doctors and lawyers and, you know, whatever. It was a place where a rock band really shouldn't have been, you know, almost if you can imagine. And of course, in comes Ozzy. And, you know, he was, I don't even know, but he seemed to be a little, you know, happy, I guess is the nice way to put it. So he comes in and we get a table. Of course, Ozzy probably had more money than all the people in that whole place. And we're sitting down and, we're ordering and the band is talking to me. And, dinner comes out. They bring out the salads. And at the time, I used to not like little cherry tomatoes. So I said to Ozzy, I said, would you like my cherry tomatoes? And he said, no, I'm fine. So I turned my head a bit to talk to Randy Castile, the drummer. And the next thing I know is I see Ozzy's hand going into my salad, pulling out the cherry tomatoes out of there. You know, it was just a funny thing, you know, to see him reaching in with his hands and you know, and so I thought that was pretty good. Then Sharon, you know, I think Sharon realized that she had to get him out of there. So they leave, and next thing we know...
So was he eating the tomatoes, or he was doing you the favor of removing them?
No, he was eating them. He took one right out and put it in his mouth. Yeah.
He changed his mind. Right, nah, I don't want any. Then, like, mouth. Okay, you know what? I'll have some.
So he, after that, this is a great story. They bring me back to where Ozzy was staying. I don't know if they call it a chalet, a bungalow or anything. Anyway, it was on Sunset Strip. And I go in there and I'm sitting in the living room and Ozzy's in a chair. And that's where I met the oldest daughter, Amy. She was just a baby at the time. And Ozzy has Amy on his lap. And they have the TV on. MTV is on. And the next thing you know, Black Sabbath Paranoid comes on MTV. And Ozzy starts bouncing Amy on his leg. Look, Daddy. Look, Amy. There's Daddy on TV. Right? You know, just doing the whole, you know, it was like a real moment that, you know, you couldn't believe to watch, you know, Amy seeing her father on the TV in a Black Sabbath video and everything. So, I mean, it was little things like that I'll always remember. I still have, believe it or not, Sharon and Ozzy's phone number. When they gave, Sharon wrote it down for me for that place. And the next thing I know, the band took me out to the Troubadour. We drove around, and I went back to the hotel. And
at this point, you have to think, I think I got this gig.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, when I was at the studio making a phone call to back here to Connecticut after I auditioned, one of the people in the studio that was there said, I hear him talking. I think you got the gig, you know, and my heart's, you know, pounding through my chest. But you just don't know, because honestly, they had already started working with Zach. And so I fly home. And I don't hear anything for like a month. And then all of a sudden, like, I never got a phone call to say I didn't get it. I just heard that Zach was the guitar player. Now, you got to keep in mind what Zach looked like. Zach very much looked like Randy Rhoads. He was very cut. He played, you know, blonde hair, played a Les Paul like Randy Rhoads. I even had someone tell me, I mean, it's, I know this really couldn't be it, but it could have been the fact that I was left-handed. Somebody said that to me. He said, Jimmy, did you ever think about that? Because Ozzy hated Tony Iommi at the time, and Tony Iommi was left-handed. You know, kookier things have happened in music business. You know, like the stars weren't aligned that day, and you don't have it because of that, you know, weird things. But I didn't hear anything, and I can't even tell you what that feeling is like when you find out that you didn't get it. The only thing I always compared it to was the Miss America pageant. I go, you know, one girl is crowned the victor, you know, that type of thing, and the other one is the runner-up and gets a bouquet of flowers or whatever.
Right.
It was one of those things where your whole demeanor changed, you know, my heart sunk, and it was really devastating, because you almost wish you didn't get to that point, because when it gets down to, you know, just you and another person, it's very difficult. But then, you know, Sharon must have really liked the way I played guitar, because about 3 weeks after I find out, my phone rings. And there's this English gentleman on the phone, and he goes, is this Jimmy? And I said, yes. He goes, my name is Terry Butler. He says, I got your videotape from Sharon Osbourne. I'm putting a new project together, and I'd like to fly you to England and stuff. And I'm going, Terry Butler. I go, oh my God, this is Geezer Butler from Black Sabbath. I go, you're my favorite. This guy's my favorite bass player in the world. I go, and he goes, so, I mean, all of a sudden now, you know, I'm keeping my, you know, maintaining within the Black Sabbath camp here, you know. So the next thing I know, Geezer is flying me out to St. Louis. He had a home there. I guess his wife, Gloria, may have had relatives there. And he flies me. And it's a whole different situation when Geezer picked me up. Because Geezer actually showed up at the airport as opposed to when I flew out. Ozzy's guy picked me up, you know, his driver.
Right, different level.
Yeah, but I fly to, you know, St. Louis, and there's Geezer Butler from Black Sabbath waiting for me as I get off the airplane. And, you know, I wasn't expecting that. He says, you want to go have a pint? And I said, you know, at the time I was drinking, and I said, sure, I'll go have a beer with you. So we sat down at the airport, you know, for like an hour or so. And then he brought me to his home. And, you know, it's, you walk into artists like this, I'm sure you've seen it a million times in your life, but, you know, there's gold and platinum albums all over the walls, you know, everywhere. So I worked on a couple things with him, flew me home. And the next thing you know, I'm making my first trip across the seas to London, and I get picked up by a management company driver, and they bring me to this place. Smallwood Taylor was the management company out there, and they handled everybody over there at the time. Iron Maiden, AC/DC. I mean, they were
damn
huge.
Hey, Jimmy, we got to get you in studio. This is an incredible story.
Anytime. Bring me in.
Yeah. Your Ruth will be in touch today.
Yeah, I'm available. I think we'll have a blast. So much to talk about.
Oh, my God. Jimmy Bell, guitarist, auditioned for Ozzy. It got down to him and Zach. We know how that went. But, man, so damn close.
Yeah. It was a real honor, though. I got great memories.
Right.
That's
you always have that.
Yes.
Jimmy Bell, thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much for having me on, guys. Enjoy your day.
All right. You too. Jimmy Koplik, Live Nation on the show now. Good morning.
Good morning.
A shocker, even though we knew this was coming for years, seeing him 17 days ago on stage, really performing his ass off. Isn't it shocking?
Yes, very shocking. I was really shocked, and you're right. I mean, he's been sick, but he looked so good. He really looked good on July 5th. And he had, you know, real energy in his voice, I think is the best way to say it. He really sang great. You know, he couldn't stand up, but that's due to Parkinson's. So I understood why he couldn't stand up, but I was shocked. I was shocked when I saw the news yesterday morning.
What is your first memory of doing a concert for Ozzy or Black Sabbath?
Well, my first memory is Black Sabbath, which actually in the year of 1972, I had two Black Sabbath dates. I had one in Columbus, Ohio in March and one at the New Haven Arena later in March. The one in Columbus, I remember the opening act was Rod Stewart and Faces, which was an interesting package. And I didn't quite understand it because Black Sabbath, in my opinion, was the crunchiest, hardest rock band, maybe other than Led Zeppelin that I'd heard of at that time, maybe including Led Zeppelin. And I remember walking up to Ozzy and saying to Ozzy, and you know, I was, 1972, I was 22 years old, and saying, Ozzy, why is Rod Stewart on the show? He's like a pop artist. And Ozzy's answer was, he's great, he's a friend, and he's going to be a star. And that stuck with me because throughout the years, what Ozzy Osbourne did with Black Sabbath and Ozzy Osbourne, he had opening acts like Van Halen in 1978 at the Coliseum in New Haven. He had Def Leppard open up for him in 81 at the Coliseum. He had Motley Crue open up in 84. He had Queensryche open up in 86. He had all these great eventual headliners open up for him in his concerts. And I think when you think of iconic artists, not only are they iconic, but they bring you and they introduce you to other artists that are also going to become iconic. And that's why he is, in my opinion, the most iconic heavy metal star of all time. Not only was he a star, but he introduced us to so many other great artists.
And all the antics. Like, there's no, you know, when you think of rock star and you think of the antics, like trashing hotel rooms. I mean, this guy bit the head off of a bat. He urinated on the Alamo. He snorted ants, out-partied Motley Crue. You know, just a very long list of craziness.
I went up to him. I said, why are you wasting time snorting ants? Much better things to snort than ants. That was in the 70s I said that to him.
Yeah.
So, but you're right. He did very bizarre things that were certainly out of anybody's lane. I happened to be working in New York when he bit the bat off the head off the bat in the CBS Records. It was really a conference room that he did it in. And I knew his manager very, very well at the time. Sharon became his manager eventually, his wife. And he said he did it for show. He said he was sick from, he didn't like doing it, but he thought if he'd get CBS's attention by doing it. So he's the ultimate showman. But he was also the opposite when you met him in person. He was quiet, easygoing, kind and warm.
When do you remember? So you remember booking Black Sabbath, and when's the first time you remember booking Ozzy?
Well, you know, obviously, you know, he left Black Sabbath, and my first Ozzy show was at the Coliseum in 1981 with Def Leppard opening up. August 2 of 81 was my first Ozzy show, and by that time, Sharon had taken over to manage him. It was 1981 when I booked my first Ozzy show.
And he went from 0 to 60 in like 1 second. You know, he let go from Black Sabbath for being, you know, too messed up on drugs and alcohol and not making rehearsals and not showing up and showing up late to releasing this solo album, Blizzard of Oz, bananas.
Yeah. The Black Sabbath Van Halen show in 1978 at the Coliseum in September. Tickets, by the way, were $750 and $650 if people want to get really annoyed at today's ticket prices. and then you're right. 3 years later, he was out on his own playing the Coliseum with Def Leppard as a support act and came back. You know, you don't see artists come too often. They take a year or two off in between. Ozzy played the Coliseum in 81. Def Leppard was the opening act. Played the Coliseum again. It was August of 81. Played the Coliseum again in April of 82 with UFO as the opening act. And then a month later, played the Hartford Civic Center.
Damn.
You don't see that. Yeah, you don't see somebody play New Haven, headline New Haven and Hartford on the same tour. That's how big he was. He could actually play the market twice in like 40 days. That's big.
Jimmy Koplik is on. We're talking about Ozzy passing at 76. Pizza Phil, you have a story?
My friend owns Meguiar's Hearing Aids on Long Island. There's like 4 or 5 locations. And him and Ozzy used to donate hearing aids all over the place for underprivileged kids. He said that he's the most generous man he ever met in his entire life. He really did. He donated like millions of dollars worth of hearing aids to underprivileged kids. China and in Europe and United States. It was insane. He said he was the warmest person ever.
Wow, and I never heard that. So he wasn't a guy who was like, hey, bring the cameras over here and take a picture.
No. We kept that to him and his wife. They I'm telling you, when I talk millions of dollars for hearing aids for kids.
Awesome. Pizza Phil, thank you.
Have a great day.
You too. How often did you get to chat with Ozzy, Jimmy?
I tried to say hello to him every time I had a show with him, but there were times towards the end where they really sheltered him because he wasn't doing that well. My most memorable one is when he, and it's in actually the season 2 of the Osbournes show, they show it backstage at the Meadows, when he gets told that his wife has been diagnosed with cancer. I happened to be in the dressing room when that happened, saying hi to him. And And you won't see me in the show, but because the camera didn't pan on me, but the camera panned on Ozzy when he gets told. And he started crying, of course, which is obviously understandable. And my memory of that was during an Ozfest time and up in the Meadows. And I'll never remember that moment. I'll never forget that moment. That was really tragic. And after that, I said hello to him every once in a while, but I sort of felt uncomfortable because I was with him at a bad moment of his life. So I ended up getting more friendly with Sharon, his wife, than with Ozzy towards the end. Always said hi to him, always liked him, always gave me a warm embrace. And as the fellow just said on the radio, his offstage presence was very different than his onstage presence. And what was really amazing is all the good that he did, nobody knew about it.
Right.
Nobody knew about it. And I think that's a character trait that most people don't have, humility.
How many times has Ozfest come to Connecticut?
Well, actually, Ozfest started in Connecticut. The first time was 2001, and played 2002, 3, 4, 5, 7, and 10.
Wow.
So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times Ozfest played Connecticut. And I was in charge of Ozfest for Live Nation. So I would not only go to Connecticut, but I'd end up going to, a lot of the cities with Ozfest. So I saw Ozfest probably 40 times. I've seen Ozfest.
Well, that makes a lot of sense that he played Connecticut so often if you were in charge of booking the dates. We have an interview with Ozzy from 2010 where there were only 6 Ozfest dates and one of them was in Connecticut. And I said, Ozzy, thanks for picking Connecticut. He was like, I don't know who, I don't book it.
Yes, that's true. And I actually had to threaten the audience once at an Ozfest saying, I'll never book it here again if you don't stop tearing up my lawn. During one of the Ozfests, and we talked about it, I guess, about a month ago on this show when that happened. And I had to get up on stage and said, I am in charge of Ozfest. I will never put Ozfest back here again. If you're going to tear up my lawn, why would I bring it up? And it stopped right away. So I was successful in that, although the story goes with Sharon, she blasted me for doing that, getting on stage and stopping the riot, because it was not her my stage, it was Ozzy's stage and her stage, and I have to ask permission to stand on it. And that's after all the time that I've helped them put the show together.
Not to mention that you owned the building.
Built the stage yourself.
Correct. And I had to pay $50,000 in damages. They weren't paying for it. I had to pay $50,000 in damages. Yeah.
So that
wasn't Ozzy. I want to make that clear. That wasn't Ozzy.
Yeah. But those two together made that they were a dynamic duo.
There would be no Ozzy Osbourne without Sharon Osbourne.
Right.
I could simply say that. Ozzy never would have existed. Ozzy would never have been as popular. Ozzy's first manager was Sharon's father. His name was Don Arden, A-R-D-E-N. That was his first manager, and then Don passed and Sharon took over. So Sharon's been with Ozzy right from the beginning. And I don't know if people remember but one of the Ozfests was actually a free show. We let people in for free. You had to get tickets, and we let people in for free. And I'm on the phone with Sharon one day, and I was told, keep the expenses down. And so I got on the phone. Back then it was conference calls. Now it's all Zoom calls, but then it was conference calls. And I say, how many trucks is this show? And Sharon goes, it's 10 trucks. And I said, oh, Sharon, can we cut it down to like 4 trucks? And she goes, who the hell is this? I said, it's me, Sharon. It's Jimmy Coplick. I would never expect you, who loves artists and performances, to cut down the number of trucks that Ozzy is bringing on stage. After all, it is Ozzy Osbourne, and we have to have a show around it. I said, Sharon, the tickets are free. How do we pay for this? I got to keep the numbers down. We're going to lose money on this. We'll help Ozzy's career. The tickets are free. She goes, I don't care what the tickets are. He's bringing 10 trucks. I had to go to my boss and say, I've completely fallen on my face. So my boss says, well, you go tell her that it's not going to be 10 trucks. I said, oh, no, I'm not doing that. I'm afraid of Sharon Osbourne. I'm not doing that.
Well, Jimmy, thanks for coming on.
She was very protective of Ozzy is the best way to say that.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on. We'll talk to you in 24 hours.
You got it, guys.
All right. Thank you, brother.
Okay.
Ozzy passed away yesterday at the age of 76. AJ is out today prepping for surgery as we speak. Kelly in Stratford.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Last night I went to the Mammoth Daughtry and Creed concert, and I had never seen Mammoth before, but heard he was great, you know, Eddie Van Halen's son, of course. And he did a big tribute, he sang Mama, I'm Coming Home. And I have the entire video of it if you guys want me to, you know, like as far as send it.
Do we have a version, Phil, that doesn't have F-bombs? Not yet.
I have the performance anyway, which I know doesn't have F-bombs.
Okay, you have it.
Moment there last night.
It was
Kelly.
Awesome. It was amazing. Everybody was crying. Everybody was standing. Everybody had their phones on, and then they put the screen, you know, of all the lights, you know, from the phones on. How they do that? It was really, really cool. I was very impressed by Mammoth, and I, you know, I'm older, so I've been to a lot of concerts, but that, I mean, he has a new album coming out in October, and I'm definitely getting it. And then as far as Daughtry, you know, he just spoke words about Ozzy, and, you know, everybody went crazy. I mean, there's like 25,000 people there. And then Creed, he sang one of his own songs in tribute to Ozzy. So it was really...
Of course he did.
I know.
Is anyone surprised
Scott
that,
Staff.
Like, I'm going to honor Ozzy by singing one of my
songs. Own song.
Yeah, right.
That's funny. I knew you were going to say that. All right, well, I just wanted to let you guys know.
No, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Why would you put... I would put Mammoth second. I'd put Daughtry first, Mammoth second, then Creed.
Well, it was actually supposed to be Mammoth and then Three Doors Down and Creed. But because of Brad's cancer, I guess, you know, they canceled out. So they put Daughtry in their place. And they were supposed to be second. So that's why it went that way.
Weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not,
you know what I mean?
Not
concert.
Three Doors Down.
Yeah.
You know, like that Daughtry doesn't replace
it's
Three
a dip.
Doors Down. Yeah.
No disrespect to Daughtry, but it's a dip.
I never saw him before either, but he was okay, you know. But I was really impressed with Mammoth, I have to say. I heard they were really good, and he can play.
Well, he came up in Van Halen, and then, you know, he basically went to the school of Foo Fighters in terms of loving the audience and just winging a song like that. I think before he played that song, he said, "We've rehearsed this three times."
And this is the second tribute now that he's done in the state of Connecticut after like a big rock death. He did one to Taylor Hawkins very famously.
That's right.
He's not afraid to do that. Like in the moment where like it's necessary, like we're all thinking about this person. I'll do my best. I don't know how good it's going to be, but we're all going to be here together.
And how hard is it for him after, you know, just that must invoke the feelings of losing his dad when he's singing that song? Like, how do you get through? It sounds very, I've never heard him sound that emotional singing.
Yeah.
Man.
It was great. Everyone was in tears. Everyone. I mean, everyone. And we had really good seats. We were right in the center. You know, and everyone, as soon as, you know, he started with that song, everybody was sitting, you know, the entire time he played until he went for the tribute. Everybody was on their feet, you know, and it was so moving. It really was.
Well, thanks for sharing that, Kelly. Appreciate it.
All right. Have a good day.
All right. You too. Boy, what an honor to have Doc McGee, KISS manager and just rock and roll royalty, call in the day after Ozzy dies. Doc, thanks for making time.
Well, thanks for calling, actually. Ozzy was very close.
Do you have a particular memory you'd like to share?
Well, there's so many of them. I mean, I met Ozzy when he first started, and with Motley and everybody else. We just did shows forever, and they became very good friends of mine. And I brought them to Russia, which was amazing, 1989, in the Moscow Music Peace Festival, where Ozzy was the god over there. So, and Sharon and Ozzy have just been really, really close friends for 40-some years.
You're featured in the Motley Crue movie, The Dirt. Your story, not to get off the Ozzy conversation here, but your story is one of my favorite stories in that documentary.
Oh, well, you know, that's, I don't know how accurate all that was, but it's not the Kennedy assassination, it's a rock film, so, it's, you know, it's pretty good, though.
Yeah, can you bring us through that night?
I'm not sure which one you're talking about with Ozzy.
Well, no, the dinner.
Oh, the dinner. Well, that's a whole different story.
Yeah.
You know, today I'm kind of into celebrating Ozzy and all that stuff.
Yeah, you want to share with us an Ozzy story?
Well, you know, listen, Ozzy was a blood brother, literally a blood brother. All got stabbed in Heidelberg, Germany, Motley and Ozzy at 4 a.m. and became blood brothers. So we've been pretty close ever since. And
who brought that up?
Sharon. That was, you know, actually it was Ozzy at like 4 a.m. You know, it was the end of it. We did a big festival there with Motley and Ozzy, and we had done the Bark of the Moon tour and all that stuff. And, you know, we're just partying as you did in the 80s and certainly in the early 80s. And they had thrown all the furniture out of the hotel window so they could have more room in the room. Obviously, that's what you do.
Obviously.
You know, if you have too many people than furniture, then you got to throw the shit out the window. You know how that works. And we just, you know, everybody was partying, and Ozzy decided that I was going to be his blood brother. And then the rest of the guys chimed in, and there we were all standing there with holes in our hands and blood running.
So what did you use to make the holes?
It was a little Swiss Army knife. I didn't try it, but, you know, I got stabbed. But, you know, hey, that was part of the process back then.
Where was Sharon while all this was happening?
Sharon wasn't there. She was a protector of Ozzy since I can remember, since I met both of them. She's the glue on that family and everything else. She's an amazing woman. And I'm proud to say that I know her very well. And that, you know, she was the biggest thing in Ozzy's career. I believe she kept him going, tried to keep him as straight as she could. You know, maybe sobriety's not for everyone, but she kept him till yesterday.
And you were,
which is amazing.
Were you at the Back to the Beginning concert?
No, I wasn't. I was going to go, and then I had a family vacation that I said, oh, well, I'll see him when I get to London, because I go to London a lot. And now I don't get a chance to see him. Sad.
I think we're all shocked after seeing him 17 days ago. I mean, besides not being able to stand, he looked great and sounded great.
You know, I don't know about his, you know, what condition he was other than what I saw.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And obviously, listen, when you get older and you have problems, you know, I went to the doctor. I'm 75. I'll be 75 in September. And, he said, well, you got this or that. And I go, really? He goes, hey, at your age, when you come in here, we're going to find something.
Right.
Okay. So, you know, Ozzy fought with it, dealt with it like he always does, you know, head on, and never complains and just moves on with his life.
But didn't it seem, you know, I saw him on the 5th and I said, it looks great. Sounds great. I mean, he's 76, mm-hmm. and he's been through hell and back. I thought there'd be a long period where we didn't see him at all, and then we'd get the news. I just didn't think it would be 17 days after that show.
You know, you never do.
And, you know, I was talking to Rob Light, who is one of his head of the CAA and also a friend of Ozzy and Sharon's. And I was saying, Jesus, this is terrible. You know, once they figure out what they're going to do, I'm going to go over and, you know, whatever they have, I'm going to go see Sharon and the family and stuff. And Rob says, you know, every time I go to one of these celebrations of life, I sit there and think, and we all do, why isn't, you know, why couldn't they be here to listen to everybody talk about it, how they loved them? Okay. And nobody gets to do that. But just, you know, 17 days before, he got to be at his celebration of life.
Right.
He got to listen. He's the only one I know. So he got to feel the love. So that's great.
If you think about it, how beautiful is it that, you know, the whole family been working on this concert for the last whatever months?
Since October. I get to call in October of last year.
That's right. And so they're occupied with that, and Ozzy's doing what he loves to do, putting together a concert, being with his band, rehearsing. They do the show. He's in front of his people and his audience. He says goodbye. Then he has 2 weeks with his family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, as bad as it is, it's as good as it is. You know,
right.
And
right.
He got to do all that. He just didn't leave or suddenly go and didn't get a chance to do all this.
Right.
It's really amazing. I think it's awesome that it happened that way.
Doc McGee is on Kiss Manager, Rock Royalty, founding Bon Jovi, Motley Crue, Skid Row. The Motley Crue tour where Ozzy and Motley Crue snorted the live ants. Were you with them during that?
Well, yeah, I was. And you know, it's, and again, maybe another time it'd be more appropriate to talk about the rock incidences with Ozzy. But yeah, I was there, and all that was true. And, you know, it was just, it's fun. It wasn't as, Ozzy is one of the funniest guys you'll meet. He's warm. He's, yeah, okay. It's like I said here, when something like this happens, everybody goes, oh my God, he was the best guy in the world. And you know what I mean? And usually it's not true. Okay. They just say it after he passes.
Right.
But in this case, he was. You know, he was the guy, and he was a great guy. And so he brought so much laughter to the crew and to me and to Sharon and to all of us, you know, Robert Allen and, you know, that whole team over the years, Zach and Randy Rhodes and all the people that played with him. You know, Sharon kept it as a family, and that was Ozzy. And that was his family, was his band, and his, you know, biological family.
Doc, thank you so much for coming on and sharing some memories with Ozzy with us this morning.
Yeah, you know, and none of us are going to get out of this alive. So, you know, QTR, man, quality time remaining.
Right. Thank you, Doc.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
All right. On the show now, former Ozzy drummer and friend of the program, Carmine Appice. Good morning.
Hey, dude. Hey, it's Carmine Appice. Carl, where you been for 40 years?
You know, you told me in an interview that your last name is actually Appice, but it was too complicated to tell people it's a piece, so I wanted to honor you with the correct pronunciation of your name.
Oh, okay. That's right. That's cool, man.
Yeah.
'Cause my brother goes by Appice, and we confuse everybody, so it's pretty funny.
All right,
it's great to be back on again. How are you guys doing?
Good. Yeah, let me redo it. Everybody, it's Carmine Appice.
There you go.
Yeah. Sad news, Ozzy passed yesterday at the age of 76, and you played with him from 83 to 84?
Yeah, and he's a good guy. I mean, Ozzy, I used to talk to him. You know, I met Ozzy in 1970 when Black Sabbath first came out, and we toured with Cactus. and Sabbath, you know, and we actually got in a fight over a bag of pot back then. And it was almost like chapters, you know, like they're from Birmingham. There was a working class city, and half our guys are from Detroit. So we almost went to head to head, you know, for a fist fight.
That sounds like a boxing match from the 70s, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, me and Ozzy laughed about it when I started playing with him, you know. But I know him, yeah, I've known him, you know, for a long time. And I hung out with him a lot. Before I played with him, I hung out with him in L.A., you know, with the Rainbow and stuff like that. And, you know, he was, you know, he had a crazy life with that, drugs and everything he did. But, you know, he's a really, really nice guy. Nobody knows, but, you know, he told me that one day we were talking, and he said, you know, before I was a rock singer, I wanted to be an actor. I said, oh, no kidding. You know, we talked about it. And then when we did that Bark at the Moon video, he was a great actor. I mean, he was acting in that one. You know, where it took 6 hours to get that makeup on. And, yeah, but he's going to be missed. He's a great guy. I was just texting Bob Daisley, who lives in Australia. He wrote all the songs, you know. He was on their first two albums, and he was on the No More Tears, and he was on the Bark at the Moon. And I was just talking to him about No More Tears. I did an interview last night about Ozzy at the Philadelphia station. And he said, pick a song. And I picked the song No More Tears. When I heard it, it started with the bass. I said, this was when you called, I was just emailing Bob, asking him if that bass line started the writing of the song. Because, you know, the song's got to start somewhere. And he's a great bass player. He did a lot of work with Ozzy as well.
Do you have a favorite on-tour memory with Ozzy?
The on-tour one, that was easy. I told this one last night, too. We played Nassau Coliseum. We sold out Nassau Coliseum. And, you know, we hung out later until all the cars were gone and just hanging out, relaxing. And me and Ozzy got in the limo to go back to the city. And he says, oh, man, I'm so hungry. Is there anywhere we could eat now? And he said, quick. And I said, well, I don't know. Let me think about it. So I thought about it, and I told the limo driver to go to Queens Boulevard. And we pull up in this stretch limo. I get out. I'm wearing a black fur coat. It's in January. I got black and purple hair. He gets out. He's got a mink coat on that matches his hair, you know, the streaks in his hair. And we walk into a White Castle. You've never known a White Castle before. Right? So I said, maybe we should, you know, we're in there. Not very high-class people in there, let's put it that way. So they're looking at us, you know, kind of weird. So I said to Ozzy, let's just get these burgers and get in the car and eat them on the way home to the hotel. He says, okay. So we did that, and he loved them. Man, he loved those White Castles. So we get back to the hotel. We got a day off. Next day we're playing the Garden. And, you know, when you go up to the stage area, you come up in an elevator and you walk out, and that's where they have all the food and everything. So the whole area was catered in White Castles and French fries. He loved it so much. How about that? Funny? Yeah, but that's a good memory of mine with Ozzy. I mean, there was a bunch of them, but that one always stands out to me because it's so unique, because he's English, never heard of a White Castle, you know. And there we are, all eating White Castles.
Well, he thought it was royalty. White Castle.
Exactly.
This has to be the top-of-the-line food in America.
That's what everyone eats.
I love White Castle still. Every time we go on the road and we see a White Castle, we got to pull in.
I could eat a bag of 10 myself.
Yeah, right. I remember when I was a kid, they were cheap. They were 10 bucks, 10 cents a piece.
Right.
Something like that, 15 cents. I'm a little older than Ozzy, you know. And it was great. Yeah, the whole fun thing with Ozzy was fun. We had a good time. Motley Crue opened up for us in America and Europe. In Europe we were doing a tour, and my brother was with Dio at the time, and we were playing the same venues and we would leave messages on the wall in the dressing room with Sharpies, you know. And Ozzy would walk and go, is that your brother? I said, yeah. And my brother ended up playing with Ozzy in Black Sabbath for a few weeks when Bill Ward had a heart attack, you know, because he played with Dio with Ozzy. I mean, Dio with Black Sabbath, and he knew all the songs. So it was the best thing for all of them, just to get somebody that knew all the songs. So they got Vinny in. And then the next tour they did, Bill Ward actually played it, and Vinny was like a substitute on that one. But
the amount of great
stories with Ozzy as well.
Yeah, the great tours that you and your brother have done and records that you've recorded, incredible. Carmine also wrote, Do You Think I'm Sexy?
Yeah, Do You Think I'm Sexy? No, but it's crazy. All this year, man, you know, John Sykes died, my guitarist, and, you know, with Blue Murder, and then Rick Derringer, who's my real good friend, you know, now Ozzy, and then Sly Stone, and God, it's scary.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a... You know, it's our high school memories passing.
Yeah. Yeah, but anyway, hope he rests in peace, and maybe he's with Randy Rhoads now. They're doing some music up in heaven. Rock and roll heaven, that's it.
Carmine, thank you so much for getting up and coming on and sharing some stories with us.
No problem. Like I said, I'm always, I think I told you, producer, I'm always up at this time because we have two dogs, right? Two Vizsla dogs, and they wake us up like 8 o'clock every day on the button.
You on East Coast time?
I'm along. Huh?
You on East Coast time?
Yeah, I'm on East Coast, yeah.
Okay.
I'm in Florida.
All right, then we might just call you.
Too bad.
We're going to call you randomly.
Yeah.
Just say, let's check in with Carmine.
Yeah, you can do it. I'll probably be up. At this time every day, I'm up, so you can definitely call.
Carmine, thanks for coming on, brother. Appreciate it.
Thank you, bro. Talk to you soon.
All right, man. Carmine, a peace. Longtime friend of the program and a friend of Ozzy Osbourne, and coming to Connecticut this weekend, Don Dokken, lead singer, founder of Dokken. Hey, Don.
How you doing, guys?
Good.
Yeah, it was pretty shocking. Rhino, the whole world, which is kind of an homage, is playing Ozzy all day.
Yeah, we've been talking about him all morning. Can you tell us how you met Ozzy?
Actually, he had just joined Ozzy when he was in Quiet Riot, and he was doing... Randy was doing his last two shows with Quiet Riot. It was Van Halen, Quiet Riot, and Dokken. And we were playing at a club in Hollywood. So we all went, and then there was a room upstairs, like they called the VIP room, like you could look over the stage. And everybody was there, Judas Priest and Metallica Boys, and, you know, there's just a lot of celebrities. And, of course, Ozzy was there, being Ozzy. And that was the 80s, though. You know, that was the crazy time, as everybody's done documentaries about. The 80s were pretty wild. So, you know, that was it. And then he went, you know, and did his first album, and he was off and running. And that was great. And then, you know, of course, it's hard when you're a musician in other bands. When they're off the road, we're on the road. And when we're on the road, they're off the road. But honestly, the last time I saw Ozzy, that was years ago. It's kind of funny because Michael Wagner, who the producer who's done tons of rock records, was mixing Ozzy's record, and I can't remember the title of it, his big one, No More Tears and stuff like that on it, I think. And we were just hanging out. I walked in. There was Ozzy sitting there with a gallon of water in his hand. And I said, what's... And then three more sitting next to him. I said, what's with all the water? And he was detoxing, he said. I said, oh, that's good for you, you know. And then we ended up somehow both in the bathroom peeing next to each other. And he had his gallon
of water.
And we're chatting, you know. I'm going, oh, I'm chatting with Ozzy while we're both peeing. And I had to laugh. I never forgot it because he was peeing and holding his gallon of water, and he kept peeing and peeing and peeing. And then I was done. He was still going. You know, I went out of the bathroom. I said, man, damn, he must have peed a gallon of water out. And I just thought that was so funny. I said, man, I've never seen somebody go to the bathroom so long. And he said, yeah, I'm just trying to, I'm detoxing. He was trying to clean himself up and get healthy and all that. And I can't remember the record that Michael did. I think it was, I can't remember the titles. He did so many great records, you know. So that was about it. But, you know, because he lived in L.A. and I lived in L.A., we'd always cross tracks, you know, either at the clubs like the Rainbow and stuff like that. But, you know, he was different than I think a lot of people perceive him as, the Prince of Darkness and just a wild party animal, you know, 24 hours a day. But yes, he had his time. But, you know, I think toward the ladies, he slowed down and became more reclusive, you know. And that was about it, you know. And then we just crossed tracks, and he'd always say the same thing to me. How's that crazy guitar player of yours, George? And I say, George has been out of the band for years. Because George almost got, he almost got the gig in Ozzy. He was very close. They flew him to London, and it was down to him and Jakey Lee, I think. And I think George showed up a couple hours late. So anyway, Jakey ended up getting the gig, I think. But, you know, he was, you know, I just crossed tracks with him at the strangest places. They'd be at a Starbucks that was up in Beverly Hills area there where we all lived in the canyons. And it's funny when you talk to him, just talk to him and sitting at a table, it's not the Ozzy that the public perceived him as the Prince of Darkness, wild man. He was pretty mellow. And the cool thing about Ozzy, people don't talk, but he was very well read. He loved to read. He was always reading something, and he asked me what I'm reading, and he loved his books, you know. And but
what would you say when he asked you what you were reading? What were you reading, or what did you like to read?
Actually, at that time, I was reading the autobiography of a yogi, Paramahansa Yogananda. And he said, "What the fucking kind of new name is that?" And I said, "Well, I said, well, he's a yogi. He came to America in the 30s and basically started the whole thing at the Self-Realization Center." I just remember saying, "What kind of name is that?" And I said, "Yeah, I that wouldn't be a good name for a front man." Paramahansa, and it's Paramahansa Yogananda on vocals. I think Ozzy worked better.
Yeah, Ozzy's way better. So, are you going to do any kind of a tribute to Ozzy this Saturday, a jam at the Dam?
We don't know. I haven't talked to the Bryans since yesterday. I knew there was something up because my phone was blowing up, you right. know, 7:10 in the morning. And so, you know, obviously everybody knew immediately. So I'll talk to the boys. We don't leave till today's Wednesday. We leave tomorrow. Hell, for Jam at the Dam, and we'll come in a day early or so and just relax. And then we go off to Florida, and you know, we have to think about what the problem with singing any Sabbath song is. Ozzy's voice was so unique. You know, how do you copy or even try to pay yeah, right. homage right. to that style of singing, you know? How do you homage a song properly without messing it up? But we crossed paths for years and years, and it was always, he called me Donnie, not Don. He'd say, hey, Donnie, how you doing? And sometimes we talk for a little bit, and to be honest, I'd say, I don't understand what you're saying. Which I think was the same on his TV show, you know, he'd be talking, and I'd be going, what did he say? I'd have to rewind it, you know, because he has such a heavy English drawl, and... But, you know, it was inevitable. Well, it's inevitable for everybody, man. We're all going to have our time here in this world, and we're going to go. And he's only about five or six. He was only five or six older than me, so makes me nervous. I'm getting ready to retire, too. So And it was, but how amazing was it that just, what was it, 3 weeks ago he did his last concert?
17 days.
Amazing.
Yeah.
17 days, and he did his last concert. Sitting in that throne, and he sang great. He looked great.
Right.
He sang the songs. He didn't make any mistakes. He did a few songs, and all those great bands like Metallica and Steven Tyler and all, they're all there. It was a great, I think they had over 40,000 people. So it was a great send-off that he could even muster up the energy to say thank you to all his fans and say farewell in England and do a show, you know. And, I mean, obviously the fact that he passed, you know, 3 weeks later, I think he knew that it was coming, you know.
Yeah, Doc McGee, Kiss manager, was on earlier, and he said, you know, he's gone to so many celebrations of life where people show up and they say nice things, and to just for Ozzy to have that while he was still alive, to be with in front of his audience with his band, to have all of that, and then have 2 weeks with his family is really a beautiful way to end. If you were to pick it, you'd probably write it just like that.
I would, you know, I mean, it was like David Bowie. I mean, he went to a premiere of his Broadway show on Friday. His birthday was on Saturday, and Bowie passed on Sunday.
Yeah.
So I think that was a planned thing. But we don't know. So the message is in this business, because you live hard and fast, is to enjoy every day we have here. And I think he did in the last couple of years, just chilled out. He moved out. He moved out of that mansion that they did the TV show in and moved to like a home, a secluded home, gated community, because it didn't have two stories. He said, I can't get up those dime steps anymore. And so we just crossed tracks. But I think everybody said the same thing, like Lars or James. They said, if it wasn't for Ozzy, there'd be no heavy metal. There would be no Metallica.
Right.
We all cut our teeth on, you know, I remember the first time I heard Iron Man when I was just, you know, sleeping on my little cottage on the couch and didn't have a bed. And I bought that record and I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I was already a Sabbath fan. So, but then, you know, he did the Blizzard of Oz, and he went through a lot of tragedy, like we all do, you know. I think it really.
Helen Back, and what a beautiful ending. Don Dokken, I got to roll, man. Thank you so much for getting up and sharing some Ozzy stories with us, and we'll see you Saturday. Jam at the Dam is Friday and Saturday. You're performing Saturday on stage with Ace Frehley. So Ace Frehley coming on after you.
I'm pretty sure, and I think the biography, when it comes out, they filmed the whole concert. It's going to be pretty exciting to see.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
The scenes. All right, boss, you guys keep rocking.
All right, we'll see you Saturday.
I'll see you Saturday.
All right. Don Dokken.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.